Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Greg Allen, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, you might have heard earlier we spoke with the UN spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani about the organisation's horror at the destruction of Nasser Hospital in Gaza and reports there of mass graves as well. The European Hospital in southern Gaza is the last major fully functioning hospital in the territory. And my next guest has just come back from working there for several weeks and said what he witnessed was sheer horror. Dr. Junie Sultan, an NHS consultant vascular surgeon, joins me now. Dr. Sultan, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Can I ask you why you went there, first of all?
So a number of factors. So the one of the most important factor was that, as you can see, that the healthcare facilities and healthcare workers are protected as per international humanitarian laws and Hague and Geneva Convention. And since the end of the Second World War, this is the one of the conflicts. It has been it has hugely caused devastating impact on the healthcare facilities. Due to that, there has been a huge call out by the WHO and NGO organization, basically, to call for the humanitarians to come and help. Secondly, in my own hospital, some of my very close colleagues, their families have been directly affected by that. And one of my colleagues, his father had a gunshot wound to his head, and he was not able to be treated due to lack of any local neurosurgeon. And then he was seeing all over the internet that if some neurosurgeon can go as part of the healthcare mission and go there. So all these led to for me to go and work in the field, basically.
Okay. You went and you spent some weeks working there. You said what you saw was sheer horror. So what types of injuries did you see, did you treat?
Basically all sort of, basically the major impact of the injuries were as a direct result of the impact of the warfare injuries. So which included the gunshot and particularly the sniper shots. Around the blood vessels, particularly in the legs, arms, around the neck, in the at the level of the shoulder. So many, wherever the blood vessel is, and that could have a debilitating effect on the patient. Either they can bleed to death, and if survived, they could basically become crippled, essentially. Lots of injuries due to bombing and as a result of the shrapnels and massive burns. So these were the major injuries which were coming all the time. Then the second class, the tier of the patients was basically, you know, the war has been going on for 6 months, and 31 of the other 30, total 36 hospitals being destroyed. And a lot of those patients who were treated in those hospitals, they were not able to go back. They could not have any follow-ups, lack of antibiotics, lack of painkillers, lack of food. Weak, emaciated patients, so they had a very, very high risk and a very high rate of complications. Mm-hmm. So we had a quite huge number of patients who were actually living as a refugee within the hospital or outside the hospital in camps, and they have number of complications, whatever you could think of.
I think not just a number, just to give people an indication, I think there are
exactly
about 30,000 refugees on the grounds of the hospital, isn't that right?
Absolutely correct. And then the third was the, which was the very another something which we don't even think about, the normal day-to-day routine patients, particularly like diabetics, renal patients, cancer patients. For example, diabetic patients who normally, you know, when they get any infection in their foot, and they could have just a 1 week course of antibiotics and they could be treated as an outpatient. And because of lack of antibiotics and being seen appropriately by anyone, so they were actually presenting with the flesh-eating bacteria, you call it as necrotizing fasciitis. And they were actually ending up with major amputation, below knee, above knee amputation.
So they lost.
And I had to do so. Yeah.
They lost their leg. And I know you've talked about operating on children, for example, without anaesthetic. What is that like? Have you ever done something like that before?
No, not anything like that. But basically, there was a lot of... basically, when the casualties come, they come in huge, big numbers, and then lack of medications, and that can lead to a number of situations which can give rise to. But there were a lot of children who were coming, and they were being treated. We had a pediatric surgeon who was part of our mission as well, and he did kind of, you know, a lot of operations on the kids. And then the orthopedic team who were working like literally 24/7, And they had to do a lot of operations, including kids, because of the injuries involved in the bombs. And
when you operate on someone, a child especially, without anaesthetic, is it excruciatingly painful, or is there a surge of adrenaline that shields the child from the pain, or what is the condition like?
It's very, very, of course, painful, and it could be very difficult situation, both, especially for the patient, kind of, you know, because the way and the impact on it, and it's very difficult to describe, really, kind of, you know, and I just really wish that this situation doesn't come on to anyone.
Mm-hmm. The humanitarian crisis in Gaza is something we discuss in this program, obviously, like all others, regularly. The fears of famine, the starvation, the lack of food, the lack of clean water. You've described the lack of healthcare supplies. What did you see in terms of that humanitarian situation outside of the hospital?
It is completely debilitating the life on a massive scale, because there is, first of all, no electricity. So outside the hospital, there is no electricity at all. There is no regular water supply. There is no gas supply. So due to that, all the greenhouses, they are being basically dying because of the lack of the regular water supply. People are living in camps or houses without essential water for daily need. They cannot cook. So no day-to-day normal routine kind of, you know, exists. For example, to go to a toilet, people have to go to public places, and sometimes they have to wait for 2 hours just to use the toilet facilities. And that is having a huge impact on the woman and the lack of privacy, confidentiality, and other issues as well. So first of all, the food itself is not available much anyway. And some people were in the refugee camps. They were telling us that they were not able to have food up to a week at times.
And, so 1 meal a week?
Yes. And we could see the impact of that, because a lot of the patients were so weak. Because of the lack of the food, immunity, they were so weak, their wounds were not healing, and then on top, lack of antibiotics. So this was just having a huge, massive impact on them.
And then you have patients presenting to you, and I know you've spoken previously about a six-year-old boy who I think you operated on, and you removed shrapnel from his thigh. Do you remember that case? Can you tell me about that?
Yes, so that was a very, basically this kid was shot in his leg about kind of a 3 to 4 months ago. And because he got trapped in the north and he was not able to get out. And finally, when he got evacuated, I think it was a miracle that he survived, because it was literally on top of his blood vessel in the groin. And because it was so close to the vessel and the nerve, he was not able to walk. He was in extreme pain and agony. So finally, when they managed to get the safe passage and they got evacuated from the north and they came to Rafah, so then they came and they seek this medical advice. And then I removed this from his thigh. And he just had a very lucky escape. First of all, he had this injury. He survived. And then we managed to remove it without causing any huge damage to his blood vessel.
Yeah. Did you have painkillers for that boy?
Just the local anesthesia. So we kind of, you know, because there was no, like, that's one of the another thing which I just want to highlight, that European hospital has got only 6 operating theaters, and the workload is phenomenal. And this is the only proper full working hospital in the whole Gaza Strip right now. Due to that, there is a huge kind of, you know, like, you have to struggle to get the space in the theaters, basically, because there are so many specialties. And so I had to do it actually in recovery under local anesthesia and do that.
Okay. And I know you had you've described another 10-year-old boy who you operated on. His feet were badly damaged and injured, and you didn't have painkillers for that boy.
So I just want to clarify, actually, I did not operate on that. My orthopedic colleagues, they operated on that child.
Okay.
And when he arrived on scene, because of the lack of painkillers in the ambulance and paramedics, when they brought him, it was devastating. Both of his legs were absolutely completely damaged, and his feet were just mangling, and they were just kind of attached with just a small amount of tissue, and there was nothing what we could have done to save. And if you look at those pictures, and that will give you another idea of the lack of the equipment. So they did not even have the proper tourniquet to put on. So they just actually used the normal urine catheters, and they put them on the thighs to use it as a tourniquet. So that could actually cause more damage to the blood vessels and tissue. And that could actually kind of, you know, you have to sometime actually go higher than the usual level of amputation because of the damage to the tissues.
Okay.
So it was a very painful scene to witness, the way that kid arrived, and he was in pain, and then kind of, you know, and then my orthopedic colleagues did the amputation on him.
Okay. Were you able to save that boy, you and your colleagues?
Yes, the child was saved.
Okay. Correct. It's very distressing to hear all of those cases, Doctor, and it's just... I suppose, a microcosm of what's going on in Gaza. There's some breaking news I can tell you now, and I'm sure you won't be surprised by this, but the rubble in Gaza, we're told now, will take 14 years to remove. Does that in any way surprise you based on what you've seen?
I'm not surprised, because when you pass through, you will just see rubble everywhere. You will see destroyed houses. You will see like devastation all everywhere around, and there is no kind of a kind of, you know, you don't see any their local kind of, you know, civilian setup which are actually trying to help or deal with it. There is no local machinery or anything, so sometimes you have to take longer paths to get to from point A to point B because of all the road blockages and etc. So it's very, very obvious. You can see it.
Yeah, okay. And that's from the UN. That's according to the UN, that timeline. It's a great pleasure to speak with you, Dr. Junie Sultan. You went with a US group, am I right, to Gaza?
Yes. So I went with Fajr Scientific, which is a non-business. It's a NGO, and they organized this mission along with WHO. And there were myself and another pediatric surgeon from UK. So both of us were UK, and the rest team was from USA.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme. That's Dr. Junie Sultan, an NHS consultant vascular surgeon.